Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attendance here tonight. It's a real pleasure to welcome you to this event. It's a Questions of Character event, and I'm Margaret Alcorn. I am a convener of CELMAS. And for those of you who don't know CELMAS, we put on events where people get the opportunity to express opinions, to explore ideas, to think about issues and offer a non-judgmental point of view. So that's what we do, and we were delighted to come together to put this event in place with Character Scotland. Gary will introduce Gary in a minute or two to tell you a bit more. And really the whole point of tonight is for you to begin to think, to engage, to discuss and to consider some of the issues around character in terms of education. I'm not going to do anything other than just welcome you and pass you immediately over to Gary, who's going to give you just a kind of overview first.
My name is Gary Walsh. I am an executive officer. I work for a charity called Character Scotland, which was set up in 2009. And the charity does two main things. It runs a schools-based programme called the Inspire Aspire programme. And that's one of the Legacy 2014 Commonwealth Games educational programmes. Last time I counted, it was happening in about 55 nations across the Commonwealth taking part in that. It's an opportunity for young people to explore their character attributes and values and to share on an international level their values with their peers. That's one of the things that we do. And the other strand, if you like, of the work of the charity is to do things like this, to run events, to create spaces for dialogue and thinking around the issues of character and values, and in this case particularly the links with education. So during the course of my introduction, I'm planning on doing two things. Firstly, I'd like to take you through the pre-event survey results, and thanks to all of you for taking the time to do that. Well, I think we had about 27 responses in the end, which was really great. I realised it was not a straightforward or short survey to complete, so thank you for doing that. The results are really fascinating, so I'm going to take you through the results of that survey. And secondly, I'm going to take you on a bit of a sort of tour of character and its place in mainly, I suppose, in academic circles and Scottish educational policy, with the proviso, though, that the context for discussions this evening are grounded in practice and the realisation that teachers are central to the development of curriculum and pedagogy. The intention of bringing this subject to you today is to explore the practical manifestation of the concept of character, as opposed to being rhetorical or overly theoretical. So I'm going to set a bit of context, get that some of that out of the way, if you like, at the beginning, and with the anticipation of allowing the speakers to engage you in some practical applications of this. So, what's in a word? Character is a ubiquitous term. It's applied consistently in many contexts, including areas as diverse as architecture, literature, recruitment. If you think of character references, you might have had to give a character reference or ask somebody to provide a character reference for you. And in other areas, such as Scots law, it's been particularly prevalent and consistent in Scots law, as in a judgment as to whether a witness is of good character, for instance. Sports commentary, a lot of football managers and rugby managers talk about their team showing good character. So it's a word that's used in lots of different settings. According to Dr. Amos Glaze, first time recipient of the Robert Owen Award, this is a quote from her: "If we want a society in which citizens care about one another, in which qualities such as honesty, integrity, fairness, courage and optimism are pervasive and violence of any kind is discouraged, we have no choice but to nurture these qualities in our homes, in our schools and in our communities." She urges educators to reach across all diversities ranging from race and gender to social and economic status and places of origin, to find common ground on values. And she suggests that that common ground can be enhanced by character education, building communities of character, and character in the workplace. Now, Scotland has a long and intertwined history with character and values. Discussions around character were central to the Scottish Enlightenment. In the midst of his radical approaches to social reform, Robert Owen founded the Institute for the Formation of Character at New Lanark in 1816. The country's history and education is much tied to its culture and underpinning values. Scotland's traditional aspirations relate to social reform, justice, and a shared determination to address broad and general questions relating to philosophy, metaphysics, ethics, economics, technology, humanistic approaches to pedagogy, and democracy. Notable Scottish thinkers in these areas include Adam Smith, David Hume, Robert Owen, John McMurray, and Alistair MacIntyre. I feel a bit of a fraud talking about Scotland and Scottish thinkers. You're probably listening to my accent wondering, where you can't quite place that, where is that? I'm from a little place called Waterford. It's on the southeast coast of Ireland. Some of you might have heard of Waterford Crystal. Some of you are nodding your heads. You might have even heard of a gentleman called Val Dunican, who's a Waterford man. I've got a knitted jumper and a guitar inside. So, character and values education are not new ideas, and their renewed focus is a natural extension in many ways of Scotland's educational history. Today, with the continuing development of initiatives such as the Curriculum for Excellence, Getting It Right for Every Child, and the enthusiasm for which professionals in Scotland have embraced programmes such as Rights Respecting Schools and Eco Schools, Scotland has been recognised internationally as a global leader in education. Character and values-based approaches are arguably integral to educational policy in Scotland. The purpose of Curriculum for Excellence is to develop young people's attributes and capacities. The professional teaching standards are underpinned by the values of social justice, integrity, respect, and professional commitment. Similarly, other policy agendas, such as the Wood Commission report, Global Citizenship, Enterprise and Education, and the UN Decade of Education for Sustainable Development, provide an ideal context for approaches aimed at developing and empowering young people's values, skills, and attributes. Now, recent developments in science and technology, psychology and philosophy have resulted in a global resurgence and the emergence of new frameworks for character and values development. A plethora of new programmes have been made available around the world. The research and evidence base is continually growing. And initial findings suggest that there are strong correlations between skills, character qualities, and positive outcomes for children and young people. On an international scale, the OECD is leading a lot of the work around the world in that research. In the UK, the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues in the University of Birmingham is contributing to the research base for character, as are Scottish institutions, including University of Glasgow, University of Aberdeen, University of Edinburgh, and University of Strathclyde. But there are many questions to explore. Character and values are not straightforward concepts. There are lots of things we don't know about it. To what extent are values, skills, and attributes the cause of these positive outcomes, whether it's employability or health and well-being? How does character and values education actually work? Can character and values be taught? And is it even appropriate to do so? How are the approaches shaped by cultural, societal, or indeed universal values? What are the main criticisms and misconceptions around character and values education, and how should they be addressed? What are the system-wide conditions that would enable the cultivation of character and values, and do we have access to those conditions? Some of these questions are what we're here to discuss tonight. This event has been created with the idea that getting the right answer, in this case, isn't really the important thing. The important thing is asking the right questions. So that's why this event is called Questions of Character. It's about asking questions of character in the sense that it might take something on the lines of a character trait to, like also questions of character in the sense that we like to put the whole notion of character and values education through its paces. Now these are the overall purposes of education. So what I'd like to do is to start with first of all some of the survey results and just take you through those before moving on to talking about how this links to the purposes of education. So to give you an idea of who's here and who completed the survey, the majority of you are from a teaching or leadership management setting or interested in these areas, but we had a pretty wide range of people completing. Local authorities and others. 60% of you were aware of character education in some form before today, either aware or very aware, and your awareness came from various sources, whether it be education for sustainable development, the role of values in the curriculum for excellence, awareness about our organisation, Character Scotland, or research, particularly to do with the philosophy of education. And when asked, do you have any concerns about character education, 54 of you said that you didn't, 29% of you were a bit unsure, 17% said you did have some concerns about it. And some of the concerns that were raised were things like, oh, character is a Victorian concept, it's a values-laden approach. A response said, it depends on whether my preconceptions of character education are accurate or not. There were concerns about time spent away from curriculum study. And some people said that there's a specific focus already on character education built into the curriculum for excellence. But there wasn't an agreement on that. Some people were saying the opposite. A suggestion as well that character education should be informed by underlying philosophies or a values-based approach. In the questions that followed, there was really broad agreement. I'm not going to read out every single answer here, but a really broad support and agreement for the role of educators in developing character and attributes in young people. So you'll see some of the stats here for the questions that were asked about that, in terms of educators creating a positive moral ethos. You can see that one. And being able to assist pupils to empathise with the experience of others. Empathy came across as a really, really strong theme throughout the whole survey. And equally, in terms of the role of the wider education system, again, there seemed to be a degree of fairly strong consensus that we should be looking at this area in some shape or form, or that we already look at this area. So, one of the other questions, which was very interesting, was what we asked you, which values should we aim to engender in children and young people, and what does a community of character look like? Difficult questions, but what I've actually done is, on the basis of your answers, I've applied a particular framework to character and mapped your responses against that framework. So what I've done is taken the framework from the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues, and they use a virtue ethics perspective for the development of character, and essentially they give four categories, if you like, for different versions of virtues. Intellectual virtues, which are about thinking it through. So it could be about autonomy, reasoning, curiosity, critical thinking. Moral virtues, aimed at doing the right thing, if you like. Courage, self-discipline, etc. civic virtues, responsibility towards our community, and performance virtues aimed at achieving targets, meeting particular tasks. Now, I'd like to ask you a question while you're here just now. In the survey, we asked you what should be developed in children and young people. What I'd like to ask you now is what you think the education system is currently developing in children and young people. So where is our focus? If you were to use these four headings, do you think, for example, that the education system is geared mainly towards a construct of a young person, which is based on morals, or is it more about civic values or virtues, performance or intellectual virtues? We could just do a quick poll here by way of a show of hands. So what about intellectual virtues? Who would say that that's the one that we focus on most? Okay, so quite a few people there. Okay, moral virtues. We've got two for that. Civic virtues, community-based. Okay, and performance virtues. Okay, so what I'm taking from that, I hope you agree, is that performance and intellectual seem to be the biggest two, civic and moral less so. When we compared this to the answers that you gave us in the survey, in terms of what virtues should we be focusing on, it's interesting, isn't it? A lot of the moral and civic virtues were the ones that we're focused on in terms of what we should be developing, what we should be focusing on, and performance and intellectual virtues. We're still there. It's not that they weren't there, but you can see the degree of emphasis placed on those. Now, this is not a scientific thing. It doesn't represent real research. These are some of the workings I used. You might argue about the way we've kind of divided that up. I can share these slides with you. You can be critical about it yourself and think about it afterwards. But that's roughly what we came up with. So, all in all, with character education, in order to get your head around it, and I've been trying to get my head around this for the last 2 years, and I still haven't, really, to be honest. It's a very complicated thing, but the way I've taken to summarising the potential promise of character education is embodied in this question: what kind of people does the world need? And if we're going to ask that question, we should also ask what kind of world do people need? So, character education 50 years ago was accused of being too individualistic. It was too focused on people and their individual traits, whereas now it's being seen as a way of understanding individuals and society in which they operate. So the purposes of education in terms of developing our young people, some ideas for that. So in terms of ideas for why go to school, if we take some ideas here from others, in 1998 UNESCO offered a set of aims for schooling worldwide: learning to know, learning to do, learning to live together, and learning to be. I always read the last one and think, learning to be what? Kind of sounds like an unfinished sentence, that one. So that's one way to look at it. In terms of a Scottish thinker, John McMurray, in his infamous lecture at Murray House School of Education in 1958, entitled Learning to be Human, he said, "We must base our approach on values and understandings which rest upon common humanity." So it was very much a humanistic approach to the purposes of education. And schools being a living community that actually the purpose of which is to help understandings of what it means to lead good lives together. Martin Luther King said that intelligence plus character, that is the true goal of education. He said that, to give it the full quote, he said, "We must remember that intelligence is not enough. Intelligence plus character, that is the true goal of education. The complete education gives one not only power of concentration, but worthy objectives upon which to concentrate. The broad education will, therefore, transmit to one not only the accumulated knowledge of the race, but also the accumulated knowledge of social living. Other ways of thinking about the purposes of education, and particularly how character education over the decades and in the last 300 years or so, to give you a potted history of that, in their paper entitled "Towards a New Era of Character Education in Theory and Practice," Walker et al. Trace how the construct of pupil character has evolved in recent history. In the early 18th century, the majority of teachers, influenced by the doctrine of original sin, were seeking to remove pupils' intrinsic immorality through a regime of tough discipline. So very much a kind of a deficit model, and overcoming pupils' sinful nature and helping them to accrue good character, very much according to a Western Christian concept of goodness. Class-based principles were adopted in the early 19th century with, for example, future Scottish manual workers taught the benefits of being disciplined and hard-working, hence the polite pupil. Character education started to grow substantially in the late 19th century, creating something of a new golden era. At the end of the 1940s, Young Citizens at School was published by the Scottish Education Department with ambitions of developing character in schools through positive habits. In the early 20th century, the emergence of Kohlberg's groundbreaking thesis on children's stage-bound moral development was the major influence throughout the 60s and 70s. Traditional moral education fell out of favour significantly, and the role of the school was to guide pupils through the cognitive processes required to understand the morally good, and therefore inevitably become morally good, a view that has been challenged, if not entirely debunked. A meta-analysis in 1980, for instance, revealed that there was very little correlation between Kohlberg's stages of moral development and actual moral behaviour. Before the turn of the new millennium, new themes started to emerge, focusing on emotional literacy and self-esteem, remedying the essentially emotionally vulnerable pupil. And that then became key for educational policy. And the discourse now seems to have settled around the concept of the flourishing pupil, which we're familiar with in Curriculum for Excellence. This concept appears to hold a lot of currency in policy. But do we really understand what that means, the flourishing pupil? In the 21st century context, character and values haven't lost their relevance. Far from it. We're being bombarded by stories of corruption, abuse, scandal, conflict, intolerance and institutional failures. We're limping our way through the polarising issues of globalisation, multiculturalism, neoliberalism, climate change, political differences, an ageing population, and personal privacy being pitted against national security. The unprecedented speed of progress in technology means that the next generation will have the toughest ethical dilemmas with which to contend. Current and predicted trends include significant developments in life extension sciences, genetic research, cloning of replacement body parts using 3D printers in some cases, genetic modification, food irradiation, unmanned combat drones, and social media ethics, to name just a few of these moral dilemmas. Times are tough for young people due to a difficult labour market, growing incidences of mental illness, and unprecedented levels of debt. In terms of employability, recent graduates and young people looking for jobs that they seem unable to grasp, with employers preferring to opt for those from older generations. What Generation Y lack, we are told, are soft skills. Articles and reports have been pushing soft skills recently, and it seems that employers they want soft skills, but they can't get them from the young applicants that are coming through. But why is there such a fixation on soft skills now? Previously, the qualities that people needed to survive and succeed were different. Economic scarcity has changed throughout generations, and so soft skills weren't always the currency for workers to gain jobs. From the beginning of history, the goal for humans to succeed was land. Land sourced food, and to make money you needed to either have land or work on the land. During the Industrial Age, the use of new machinery meant that skilled labour was the scarcity. Your labour skills were the key to gaining employment. In the 20th century, the new focus was on information and knowledge. That was the guarantee for power and success, with new markets such as marketing and advertising developing. Knowledge and information was essential in the knowledge economy. So what people are scrambling for now are these new soft skills. The ability to hold a conversation with a complete stranger, the ability to think creatively, to be polite and respectful, to work with others of different personalities, and to make an assertive decision on your own. There are claims from those such as Dr. Tony Wagner, expert in residence at the Harvard Innovation Lab, that the knowledge economy has evolved into an innovation economy. So it's no longer about what you know, but what you can do with what you know. These soft skills have a supposed economic value of £88 billion. So I would urge you to consider that the phrase soft skills is a misnomer. It suggests that the skills being referred to here are implicitly not hard. They are perhaps effeminate, secondary, or peripheral. It ignores the empowering idea that soft skills can lead to hard outcomes, which is what the research is suggesting. One last theory to look at before I hand over to our speakers. What I'm doing is putting lots of big questions towards you, and the speakers are going to focus in on more specific issues. It's been a defining human characteristic to augment our personal capabilities with technological enhancements. And this is happening today in ways that are challenging us to reconsider what it means to be human. In 5 years, it will be possible to record your entire life on a hard drive from when you wake up in the morning until you go to bed at night. Why would we need to learn a foreign language when automatic translation is available? 60% of financial trading is now done by computers. 42% of Wikipedia is edited by 12 robots. Pathology is more accurately done by computer. In 2011, the Stanford School of Engineering and Medicine found that computers were faster and more accurate than doctors at diagnosing breast cancer. Smart drugs or nootropics taken in the absence of disease can enhance cognitive and affective function, alertness and mood. Around a quarter of UK students at Oxford, Newcastle and Leeds have used a smart drug called modafinil. We're seeing the fall of the fashion model job and the rise of the computer animator. We're even seeing the rise of avatar pop stars who attract real audiences. Anybody heard of some images here, by the way, of how technology is interacting with us as human beings? So this is a piece of technology designed to make this worker be able to lift incredibly heavy weights. We've got Google Glass, which is becoming normal as well. There's some nootropics. This is the avatar pop star, Hatsune Miku. Yeah, heard of Hatsune Miku? Person on a screen, this avatar on a screen. And there's a video on YouTube that you should have a look at. It's really quite incredible to see the reaction she's getting from the crowd. Flipping hamburgers can be done by robots. Apparently a robot can flick 360 burgers in an hour. These robots don't need breaks, they don't need holidays, and robots can and are providing unflinching and committed care for the elderly. Now, as scary as all of this may seem, these developments don't necessarily point to the end of character or the human condition as we know it. Quite the contrary. It is argued that it calls for a renewal of human capacities such as wisdom, ethics, curiosity, creativity, courage, self-awareness, resilience, adaptability. If we are to be an age of augmented superheroes, To what ends do we use our superpowers? With great power comes great responsibility. These even challenge us to consider that we might need to recognise machines as moral agents in themselves. So where does all that leave us? All those big questions. What is this brave new world? And what does it demand of its brave new citizens? Can a framework for character and values education emerge from our existing thinking in Scotland to bring it back to where we are in education and policy? Or do we need to fundamentally reconsider and even redesign everything we're doing? If we consider that values are central in our practice, we're very comfortable with that idea. Values can take lots and lots of different forms. Values are complex. If we also consider that values are strengthened by knowledge and also enacted by skills and attributes. So in other words, values on their own aren't enough. There's a really well documented disconnect between values and action. We need, as well as having values, we need character, attributes or strengths or qualities to actually apply our values and to live by them. So that's where the idea of skills and attributes, action-based concepts, come in. And these things are enabled by our social structures, our culture, our systems. And so the speakers that we're going to hear from today are looking at these concepts from various different levels. The kind of systems dimension, what's happening on the ground in a school, and how are we preparing teachers for this way of educating. So I'll leave you with the idea that a framework for character and values education is where potentially this area could be going for Scotland. How can that enhance where we are at the moment for Scotland? How can that contribute to what's already in existence, what's already there? There are lots of questions around that. Which values do we focus on? What knowledge do we focus on? Which skills, which attributes do we focus on? These are the questions of character that would need to be addressed if we're going to have a look at that kind of idea, that kind of framework. If we were to consider that character education can be considered a form of pedagogy and look at some thinking around that, Brian Boyd's report, A Common Wheel for Education, asks us to examine the role of schooling in creating a civilised society. Kelly argues that Curriculum for Excellence is a process curriculum, and Mark Priestley and Humes have done a lot of work to suggest that the Curriculum for Excellence should be considered a process curriculum, which means that it would start from a concern with the nature of the child and his or her development as a human being, and that it should be overtly value-laden and ideological model. Is that the direction that we're moving in? And what is the role of values and concepts like character in all of this? Learning to be as well as think and do. That's really, in terms of character education as pedagogy, what's the difference between learning how to be an artist versus learning how to do art, or learning how to do maths versus learning how to be a mathematician? It's a very simple change to that question, but it makes you reconsider how it is that we're actually engaging with young people when it comes to things like attributes and values. So I'll leave you again with those two questions: what kind of people does the world need, and what kind of world do people need? These are big questions. These are questions of character. Thank you very much for your attention.